So I had to get three jobs. I used to work for Jen as my mentor, and I learned a lot about fine dining, but also I worked at Cheesecake Factory. I worked with Kevin Taylor. I have three jobs. I go to home and sleep 3 hours. You don't want to feel that you're failing at something. So it was one of the hardest things that I have to go through. And I've been through shit in life. I am a very strong person, and this is not gonna kill me. If people think Dana is done because I lose one business, just wait. We all start as a prep guys dishwashers. And I bring them along with me, and I say, one day everybody wants to own the restaurants. I want to create opportunities, and that's one of the reasons why I keep open more. Not for me, not to keep working more hard, is to provide a good life for people and to make their dreams come true just like I have mine.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and I'm so excited for this episode. I'm here in Cotonade Restaurant with restaurateur and chef Dana Rodriguez. Dana has been in the news a ton lately because of the successful launch of Cotonade and her continued success at Work and Class and Super Mega Bien, which I love. I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. And, of course, her fame earned by being executive chef of Casa Bonita. We'll talk about Dana's journey from dishwasher to 3 times James Beard Award finalist and a ton about the restaurant business. Dana, glad you're on ProCo 360.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And shout out to Shannon Reese and Robin Zimmerman, Mel from Feed Media. They helped us connect, and I appreciate that. So let's get started. To set the stage, I mean, describe where we are. We're upstairs at Carne Restaurant. Tell us where we are.
Carne is a really fun place. I love it because it was something that I always wanted to do, and I turned it into something like 70s. I just turned 50, so I'm like, let's celebrate 70s, but in a cool way. I wanted to do it different than most 70s theme. I think this one is fucking sexy and beautiful and cozy, and it feels like home.
Yeah, it's got is it a Latin vibe a little bit to it, or what am I seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I try to do, like, I love plants. I love these beads. I like this chimney. Like, I love colorful things. When people go to my house, it's like, oh, it's sage and orange and all colorful. And I think Carne is, yes, like my house. I wanted to show something really unique, and it feels good to be here.
That's cool. And I'm looking into the lounge behind the beads at the Playboy magazine. Is that your house like that too?
Sometimes at nighttime, it turns into something like that.
Well, okay, let's step back. And let's, you know, to kind of bring everybody up to speed on your background. You were born in Mexico. You made your way here. Talk about that.
I born in Mexico. Obviously, I just tell you my age, which is not pretty. I just turned 50. I grew up in a farm with my parents. I'm an only child. And then we moved to Juarez as the border. As you know, coming from a farm, being to a border is wild. It's like, oh my God, this is a totally different animal, right? I moved there when I was 9, so I can go to school. I can have my education because we don't have those schools and the farm. And then I went to Monterrey, Mexico, to study engineering computers. And then I come back one of the summers, and I decided not to go back and get married and have kids. And then
that wasn't your plan.
Move to the States.
Yeah. So that wasn't your plan to get married and have kids then?
I always want to get married. I wanted to have kids. I was young. I was 19, and I have my kids. By the time that I was 21, I had my 3 daughters. So I start my life fast.
Yeah.
Like everything in my life is like local.
Wow. 3 daughters by 19?
21.
By 21.
I started 19.
And are they still living in Denver with you?
They live here in Denver, yes. Now I have grandkids.
Oh, wow. Congrats. Are they is your family all part of the restaurant business?
No.
No.
No one
right.
wants to work with me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't blame
them. We'll find out more about that suit. So then you found your way to Denver and you started working at Panzano's, right? As a dishwasher?
Yes. That was my first job. So when I moved here, I checked different states to see LA, Chicago, Utah. And then when I landed here in Colorado, it was like at this time of the year, literally 26 years ago. Beautiful colors, amazing weather, beautiful, nice people. And I see this restaurant about to open Panzano. They're on construction. So they're hiring people to clean after construction.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I start. And then the chef is like, oh, you want to start as a dishwasher? That's how I started in 1998.
As a dishwasher, well, first cleaning up and then as a dishwasher. And then you went from, as I recall, because I did a little research and went from dishwasher to prep cook to sous chef to pasta and baking. Like, how long did that take?
Probably I learned everything in 2 years. So when Jen Jasinski, which is my mentor, and Beth Gruish, they take over Panzano in 2000, I was working there with a previous chef, two other chefs that they opened. Jen is like, you learn really fast. You can do this. I'm going to show you how to do pasta, pantry, prep, banquets,
wow,
and desserts, Italian breads. And I learned it all. And she's like, oh, maybe she can work.
That's kind of an interesting, because most people who make it to be a chef have gone to culinary school of some sort, right?
Most of the people go to culinary school, at least like temporary, you know, maybe not a full career, but they go and learn a little bit. To me, I'm going to tell you something really funny that I tell my kids and a lot of kids these days in the industry. At that time, I feel so lucky that I feel that they paying me and they teaching me.
Yeah.
So I don't have to go to school and get a loan or be in debt for many years.
Yeah. So this 2 year period of time where you're learning, it sounds like why did your mentor pick you? And by the way, audience, if you hear some background sound, we are at Carne. They're getting ready to open on a Tuesday night. So that's just what it is. So anyway, so how did your mentor pick you for this fast track?
Well, one of the things, you know, when I moved here, my biggest barrier was the language. Jen is from California, so she speaks a little Spanish. And I think that's how we start communicating. And she noticed that I always ask a lot of questions. I have my little notebook and I write things. Obviously, Panzano is Italian restaurant. It was a lot of things that I never heard in my life before. Hmm. This blue cheese, this pappardelle, this prosciutto. And I'm like, oh, shit, what is that? So I start writing and she noticed that I wanted to have more interest to learn.
Mm. Wow. And so as you did that, did she tell you she's taking you under her wing? Did she tell you she had adopted you as a future restaurateur?
Absolutely.
She did.
I think I remember she always have her dream to open her own restaurant like everybody, not me back then.
Yeah.
But for her, it's like, well, when I open my own restaurant, I want you to always be with me because you work really hard, you learn really fast, you're really good.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, great, sure.
Coming up through the rest of, you know, starting as different, coming up through all that world, I mean, that's hard, right? I mean, was it as long hours, as grinding, as hard as it sounds?
Well, when I moved here, Dave, I tell you, three daughters. I am a single mom, so I have to get three jobs. I used to work for Jen as my mentor, and I learned a lot about fine dining, but also I work at Cheesecake Factory. I work with Kevin Taylor. I have three jobs. I go to home and sleep 3 hours. So that's, you learn a lot very quick.
You can
quick.
Really exist on 3 hours of sleep for 2 years?
I don't know if I look 75, but I'm just 50.
Wow. I'm sure Jen and others saw that in you too, this passion to just grind it hard to get it done.
Yeah, I mean, most of the chefs, we're still friends. I still one of the partners with Jen and Beth at Rioja. I see Kevin Taylor recently. Like all the chefs that I used to work with 20 years ago, it's a big family, you know, and I think we all remember all those times when we were together.
Yeah. Well, you grew up on a farm. So did work ethic come from that? I mean, what kind of farm was it?
Yeah. I mean, my mom and my dad, we grow up chickens. We have animals. We have beans. My dad and my mom always have like little retail store. So they are the one who provide for the entire community.
Wow.
And I always been part of retail, engaging with community, working hard every day, get up with a purpose in life.
And it's every day. It's every day.
It's every day.
Yeah.
You get hungry, you go and get a chicken, kill it, cook it, make a chicken broth, and invite your neighbors to eat. That's a sweet life.
Yes. Are you serious when you say a sweet life?
Absolutely.
It's a happy life?
It is a happy life.
Do you ever long? I mean, it's got to be simpler than what you have today. Do you ever long for that?
Yes, sometimes I'm like, God, can I go back? Why everybody's trying to try to United States? I'm trying to go back to Mexico, go back to my roots, and yes, live in a farm and have fun. I mean, the industry is hard here.
Yeah.
You know, you're in a different country. It's a lot of different rules. It's a lot of things that people don't comprehend when you own restaurants. You don't go to school to own businesses. You don't go to school to be a chef. So you're learning a lot through the process?
Well, the becoming a chef thing, that's different from what most people think, because when you watch TV shows about, you know, Iron Chef or all these others, it's all about cooking. But being a chef isn't just cooking, right? You have to run a kitchen. You have to run a business, don't you?
Yes. And, you know, I never call myself a chef. I'm a line cook. I'm a dishwasher. I'm a busser. I'm a bartender. I am whatever the business needs me to be. But I think another thing that you don't see when you see TV shows, you become a mom. You become a mentor. You become a, therapist. You always listen to your employees. You try to help. You try to do so many other roles. You become an HR at one point. It's like, oh, can I break the rules?
Yeah.
You know,
well, and sometimes you probably want to break. I mean, sometimes you're just trying to survive, right? And build a business. And you've got, you know, these laws and regulations that are like, can't I just serve good food?
And you know what? That's always my mentality. Every year when you wake up and you're like, oh, there's a new rules. It's a new increase on pay. It's a new things that the city is requiring. And I'm like, shit, I cannot catch on to learn from the previous year all the new things. And then now here we go to the next one.
Yeah. So when you became the chef, you're running the kitchen, you're running the business, did you understand how your job was going to change, how your focus and your decision maker was going to change by doing all those other jobs? Or when you became in charge, was that like a slap in the face? This is really different.
You know what? In the beginning, it's excitement. Like when you have passion for something, you don't think through. I wasn't having the time to think like, oh my God, my life is going to be so different. 26 years later, now I'm thinking like, I still having a hard time to separate myself from the kitchen. I'm like, oh, now I need to manage. Yeah. Now I need to oversee one or two or three or four locations. And I'm like, no, I want to still cook it behind the kitchen every day.
Yeah.
So that's the hardest part, to learn how to work smart and how to disattach yourself so you can keep growing your brand, your name, and your business.
That's what I understand about people like you. And I interviewed Troy Gard a while back, and he had all these different businesses, and Justin Cucci, and he had different businesses. I get that you don't want to have five of the same thing, because then you become a chain, and it's really hard, I think, to manage the experience when it's a chain, right? But now you've got four different concepts. How can you get your head around that, going from one to the next to the next? And is it even fun, rather than just like staying all day in one place?
You know what? I think one thing that I always think, and I learned when I opened Working Class 10 years ago, we're about to do our 10-year anniversary. Yeah. It's not about to open another restaurant. It's to create something unique and build a new concept that people get excited to go and see. And I think that gets stuck on my head. And I'm like, well, yeah, I can have 10 Working Classes, but now Carne is different. Now Super Mega is different.
Yeah, yeah.
Now Cantina is different. Like, trying to give something unique to people, I think that's what it keeps your creativity alive. And that's what you get more like excited and passionate about it. Building this, Carne, it was amazing. Like, what colors? What can I put here? How can I design the menu? That's the exciting part. And then you become like, oh, should I have to be cooking every day in one more restaurant?
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so then does Carne become your favorite child and the others are like, oh yeah, I forgot about them.
No,
they're grown and out of the house.
No, I think it's very important these days owning restaurants is really hard. Hiring the right people is really hard. Right now, it's so different than 20 years ago. You know, we're really dedicated to work when it was on my generation. Now it's a little bit different. So you have to focus more and make sure your new baby is established really well. And when it start walking a little bit alone, then you can go back and go like one corner, another corner, see the other ones and see.
Yeah.
It's like your kids. You love them all the same, but you treat them all different.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a good analogy. All right. Hey, listeners, remember, this is ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 4 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is chef and restaurateur Dana Rodriguez. Hey, I want to thank our great sponsors. Kinsley Meetings has been ProCo 360's longest-running sponsor. They're growing based on a great reputation for planning and conducting meetings with lots of variables. And also Via Technologies, those guys host my website. They fix it when it breaks. They make sure that, they make sure it doesn't. So thanks to my friends at Via Technologies. Also Colorado Biz Magazine. Our partnership is one of building our audiences together. And finally, Denver Angels. We're partnering with them to feature great Colorado companies in their portfolio. So go to ProCo360.com and check out these partners. And I want to explore a little bit more, Dana, the mind shift of going from, you know, all the different jobs to being a leader in a restaurant? Like, what's that? Do you have to tell yourself things differently? Do you have to tell yourself, like, I'm not killing the chicken, I'm like overseeing people who are cook, you know?
Yes. I mean, like I told you a minute ago, you become a mom, you become a mentor, you become a trainer, you become, you know, a lot of shit happen in kitchens, you know that. And you always want to be there to support our people. Being a leader is not easy because everybody thinks different. It's hard to please every single person. And you're just one human and you try to talk to 20 different cultures,
yeah.
20 different work ethics. So being a leader is not easy, but it's passionate because you're learning how to teach them, but you learn from them too. So it's you feeding yourself with their knowledge and you give them your advice and where your journey is taking you.
Yeah. Now, at some point though, you look at successful people, ultimately, people, especially in the restaurant business, think you just work hard. You have a tremendous work ethic and you probably can't have time for people that don't at least share that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I always regret, when I moved from Mexico, I came with my three daughters and my parents. Both of my parents are gone now. They passed away and they helped me to grow my kids. And I remember sometimes I didn't have enough time to go and do things with them. My kids now have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to spend time with grandkids. And one of the biggest regrets is like you always focus on your business at 100% and you put everyone in front of you and you're always the last person. This is the biggest thing that I'm learning now. If I'm not putting myself first, then nothing can work. If I die tomorrow, the business are going to be the same. My family is not going to be the same.
Yeah.
So it's a hard process to learn how to take care of yourself so you can take care of the other ones.
Yeah. You know, I've learned because I had a startup company many years ago, and I don't think it's possible when you're starting to moderate, to share time with family. You know, it's just, it's 100-hour weeks, and there's just no, it's either that or lose.
You know what? This journey is called life, and it's the best thing we have. If we as a mom grow up with a book that is like, that's how mom should do, that's how business owners should run, that's how entrepreneurs start the business and that's how you end, it will never work. You have good knowledge and good things, but you have to learn lessons in life.
Yeah.
You have to fail. You have to get down so you can get up and you learn something new every single day.
All right. Well, you know, I appreciate hearing that. And it segues me to my next question, which has to do with you're having to close Cantina Loca. And that had a lot of personal connection for you when you started it, right?
Yeah.
And then you had to close it because it was ultimately unsuccessful.
Yep.
What's that feel like?
You know what? It's hard. I fight it for over a year. I'm like, I can do it. I can put more money. I can bring this new advertising and I can do shows and I can do brunch and I can do drag queen and like DJs. Like, in my mind, you can always feel that you're creative and you don't want to feel that you fell in at something. So it was one of the hardest things that I have to go through. And I've been through shit in life. But that one, I feel that, or culinary, or in Colorado, you feel like you do something good and everybody talk about it. But and then they forget about it. But you do something that is not successful and everybody talk. And it hits you really hard, you know? I remember when that happened, I was cooking in Mexico City at the embassy. And I called my boyfriend and I say, now I know how people suicide in our industry because it's been happening a lot. I say, I'm fucking a lucky bitch because I am very strong person and this is not going to kill me. If people think Dana is done because I lose one business, just wait. I'm not done yet.
Wow.
And it's, you know, you have to put that in your heart and believe it. Otherwise, like when I was looking into this one at Carne, literally I'm like, I don't think I can do it. And I was fighting it so hard. And then that little thing inside your head, like, oh my God, what if you do the best steakhouse? Or what if you do different, something that you always wanted to do? That wins. The passion and the love for the community, for the employees, for you creating something good for your state.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. You know, it kills the other bad feelings that you have and the sadness that you build.
Yeah. It's actually amazing to me how, and maybe it's this way in other cities too, in other states, but you know, you look at entrepreneurs that are sort of serial restaurateur entrepreneurs. And it seems like for every two that succeed, one fails. And that just seems, you know, really both difficult and sort of amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, but you cannot take it that personal. I mean, I have...
But it is personal. It's like everyone is your, you know, your idea, your baby, your startup.
It is, but I think if you see it as you fail, you have to see it as a learning process, because then you know what mistakes you make there, so you don't do it again.
Were there mistakes made at Cantina Loca, or did it just not go?
I mean, it was right after COVID.
Uh-huh.
It was a hard location. Demography wasn't probably ready for something like that when I opened. There wasn't enough foot traffic. It's not excuses. Yeah. I want people to understand it's not an excuse.
No, but there are reasons. I mean, as you look back, would you say that those are reasons you can learn and not make, you know, those decisions again?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
If I look at a location now, I'm like, okay, I shouldn't do more information about what is about that specific location. This one, Carne. Yeah. I don't hesitate because it's Rhino. My other restaurants are on the corner. I know the foot traffic. People know me here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you learn.
Yeah, I had a very successful uncle who told me once, because I made a mistake, I worked for him, and I said, well, I've learned my lesson. He said, no, you haven't learned your lesson until you do it right the next time. And so it sounds like, yeah, that's what you did. You put the next space where it was predictable, where you understood the market and knew that it would be successful, at least in those ways.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears a little bit, because we cannot talk without talking about Casa Bonita. We have to talk about
what
Casa
is that?
Bonita.
So, the little Mexican restaurant?
Yes. So how did that happen, that you became the executive chef?
I mean, it was a pretty good... I remember when they called me, it was probably Feed Media, and they say, hey, some clients wanted to do an interview with you to get this job. And I was busy. I was literally just open Cantina, and then I'm always doing something. I was part of like building a tequila company, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Let me think about it. And then I went to the first meeting, and I'm like, what is this about? And I always joke around with that, because that was the first restaurant that I applied in Colorado. My first, very first place that my cousin, who lived here, take me in Colfax. West Colfax, and he's like, apply here, it's a Mexican restaurant. They're always hiring people. And they say no to me. So when I get that phone call, I'm like, maybe I can work there now. 25 years later.
Yeah.
So that's how everything started. And then I got the interview and it was great.
That's cool. So you were executive chef. Your job, you know, what was the challenge? Everybody, the reputation of Casa Bonita was that the food was horrible before these guys took over and redid. So, but when you saw the challenge, what did you see?
I mean... The capacity of that restaurant compared to my small little kitchen. You know, if I'm going to design a kitchen over there, designing my restaurant to be efficient and fast, but I have three line cooks. I can do 500 people with three people and 500 people with three line cooks.
Wow.
I can do that at working class. So to what I try to put in my head is like, okay, now can we do 3,000, 4,000, 5,000?
No, is that what they serve in a night?
They used to do that. Oh. That's what in my mind is like. How I can duplicate 10 working class kitchens inside that kitchen. So that was the first challenge that I have.
Was that right? Was that the right way to think about it?
I believe, yes, today. Like, we build everything that way and it works efficient. So
yeah.
I guess I did a good job in certain things. I'm sure I make a lot of mistakes in other ones, because I never... even think to run, I never work in a facility like that size. Like, the biggest one I worked was Cheesecake Factory. They do 1,600 people at night, not 3,000.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now, did you get to actually work with Trey and Trey Parker, Matt Stone? Did they speak to you in South Park voices?
Right. I wish. No, they were very involved when we started the whole process.
Yeah.
Like, they always there. So... yeah, and they're always really nice. They treat me like a partner. They're
cool.
Like, you're a culinary partner. We believe in you. They come and try all the food at my restaurants, and they say, you're the right person.
Great.
So
yeah.
They're amazing, and I like that we create that together.
Last question about Casa Bonita, then we're going to move on. But did you jump off the cliff into the water?
No, I'm scared of the heights.
Oh, come on. You should do that. You should do that. All right. So now I do want to ask a question that's related to Casa Bonita, but not. But sitting here in this beautiful restaurant, and by my wife and I were recently in Cartagena, in Colombia, and every restaurant felt like we were part of a movie set.
That's so interesting.
And the food was beautiful, too. It was really good. But I always wonder, like, is the food more important? Is the ambience more important? And when you go to start a new restaurant, do you think about, does one come first?
To me, what it comes first is not even the aesthetics of the restaurant, what it looks like. It's building a team. That's the most important thing. If you don't have a good team, you can have the most beautiful restaurant. You can have a lot of people coming and they will never come back. To me, the most important thing is to have a build a good team, train them well, and take care of them. If you take care of your employees, they take care of the customers. And everything comes after. Like, oh, it's a beautiful restaurant, but it's a great service. But when you eat the food, it's fucking amazing. And when you have the drinks, it's like, hell yeah. It's a combination of everything. But nothing can be done if you don't have a good team.
Well, when you start a new restaurant, do you take team members from other restaurants that you know you can rely on, you know you can build on? Or how do you do that?
One of the goals that I always have, Dave, my goal is to leave a good legacy in life. Restaurants don't give you a lot of money. And I can tell you that. And any restaurateur can tell you that. We work because we have so much passion and we can provide to employees and communities. But one of my passions, it was like to keep the restaurants growing so you keep giving people opportunities. Like at Super Mega, you love that place. I pass that to my chef.
I could sit there and eat those ribs all night
Amazing.
Long. Yeah. And you passed it to your chef?
Yes. So Victor worked with me since Panzano. All my chefs are working class too. John here, we all start as a prep guys dishwashers. And I bring them along with me and I say, one day everybody wants to own the restaurants. No one is stupid like me to fucking own the businesses and run to all of this shit. But at least they have the opportunity. So I say, okay, this is your place now. Victor run it all. He does all the menus. He does everything. So eventually in 5 years, I can say, I'm no longer part of Super Mega.
Wow.
And at one point, maybe that's going to happen with working class. And maybe at one point with this, I want to create opportunities. And that's one of the reasons why I keep open more. Not for me, not to keep working more hard. It's to provide a good life for people and to make their dreams come true just like I have mine.
You know, not everybody's cut out to do that, though. I mean, don't you find some people that you want to bring along and, you know, they just, either they don't have the passion, they don't have the skill, they don't have the temperament. So, you know, you want to, but not everybody can.
Everybody has it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's important. I mean, those guys were with me for 25 years. They deserve it. They've been along with me on this journey. Eric here, he was my GM at Cantina. And I'm like, that doesn't mean because we're closing. You're an amazing person. You're good. You're going to come and run my other new restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to always bring people along with me. That's what you do as a mentor. You know,
sure.
You grab
yeah.
them like your babies. You just keep them. And then at one point you're like, okay, it's time to fly.
Yeah. So what's the hardest part about all this that people don't understand? I mean, we go into a restaurant, we have a nice meal, we get nice service. What's the hardest thing like that you
restaurants
found?
Are closing a lot.
Yeah.
I was reading an article for LA Times, 85 restaurants close and really good names, good restaurants. I never thought I'm going to be part of that. Obviously, Jen and Beth, my mentors, they just closed Stoic, S&G. And it's hard, you know, Troy closed so many restaurants. We all been on the same boat. What we realize in Colorado is like people go and check the new restaurants. And also it's a perception of people walk at 6 o'clock and they see the restaurant full and they're like, oh, they must be making a lot of money. Oh my God, they're so busy. The reality is like if you're busy for 2 hours, it's not enough to pay for all the stuff that you have since 8 a.m, making fresh tortillas every day by hand. You know, like all the operations behind, people don't understand. So it's a perception of like how busy restaurants are, how much they make, how do you keep it like super exciting for people that they keep coming back
without saying
like, oh, every day is happy hour and everything's 50% off. You would never have a business.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what happy hours are for? Is it to teach customers about who you are so they come back and you can make money?
I mean, 20 years ago when we started all these happy hours, it was about like capture the people before they go home.
Yeah.
So they're not in traffic. They can come and create more relationships with their coworkers, like be more social. After COVID, everything changed. People don't talk anymore. They're always on phones. They are not. And I try to do those on happy hours. Like, come over and hang up. If you're by yourself, if you're with family, if you're with coworkers, leave your fucking phone in the car and come and have fun and meet people and enjoy life and don't be in traffic and then go home and be happy when you get to your families. That's my goal for happy hour, but not everybody see it the same way.
Oh, that's too bad. And it, you know, it is kind of a nice aspirational goal for happy hour. Maybe we should start that.
Right?
Maybe you should have a box where people put their phone when they come in.
Right?
Yeah, that might be.
That'd be cool. Like, yeah. Come and just have fun.
Dana's happy hour, yeah. All right, so last question for you is like, last thing I want to talk about is when you think back on the last many years of running, starting, growing into who you are now, like what's one of the best stories that says, this is why I'm in this world?
It's something that I learned from my parents. My parents always give away food. So my mom feed a lot of strangers when they come in across and the farms. And she's like, oh, you can sleep here. Oh, you can feed people. She was very, very good at that. And I think I have that on me. This is my only way that I can help thousands of people. Me as an individual, I will never be able to do that, to write a check for one nonprofit or feed people. When I wanted to give something to make people happy and change their life, what a better way than providing food and drinks and a cool place?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things is like, that's why I love this, because you can get to so many people that you will never be able to do it. And yes, as an individual, but through restaurants, you can reach different states, different countries, different needs.
Yeah.
And I think that's what is my passion behind all of this.
Oh, that's cool. Do you find yourself walking around to your restaurants, talking to guests or any of that kind of thing? You do?
I love that. I always go and sometimes I don't dress like a chef. Like even when I'm in the kitchen, I have my black t-shirt and my apron. So they don't know. Sometimes I remember at Bistro Vendome, they say, can we meet the chef? And I showed up and I'm like, oh, they're waiting for a French chef. And I'm like,
with
no.
With a big white hat. Yeah.
Crazy Mexican lady. I love that. That's what I love. Entertain people. Go and talk to them. Go and see when people put up something on their mouth. Like if they try something, yes, to capture those faces like, oh, this is so good. Or sometimes you're confused like, oh, shit, they don't like it. Like that, I love that. And then I just go and approach them. So how is it? How is everything? Thank you for coming. Sometimes not everybody's happy and they don't like it. And I try to make my goal is every day talking on the restaurants. It's like, change people's life. This is our home. We're providing for them and we're lucky that they choose our house to come here. So change their life. If they come from a funeral, from a divorce, from anything, when they get here, I don't care. And the mood that they come, when they leave, they need to live happy. That's our job.
Well, let's leave on that note, shall we?
Awesome.
All right. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with chef and restaurateur Dana Rodriguez. That was fun. So good to have you on ProCo 360.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, fun. And I do love Super Mega Bien. Those are, listeners, if you haven't been there and tried those little ribs, you know what I'm talking about,
oh,
right,
yeah.
Dana? Oh, my God, so good. All right, listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.